shouldn't be rich. And of course, the initial question is, why not? Because it's obscene, possibly. I do know of a situation in which an alternative doctor charges $1,500 for the first appointment for patients, most of whom I would imagine can't get insurance on the type of medicine that's being practiced there. It seems pretty obscene to me. I'm not sure what the follow-up appointments cost, but I think they're at least $150 a piece. You know, I would say that if you really feel that you can heal somebody, I mean, just imagine for a minute that you have the capacity to do something that is going to quickly, possibly, but, you know, seriously affect somebody's health for the better. And you can do it. Not only is that a tremendous feeling, but it gives you this, I don't even know how to describe it. What sort of a sense does that give you? That gives you the sense that things are curable. Bad things can be remedied. Not just theoretically, or we'll try, or I hope, or maybe we'll get there, we'll put you on a program, the protocol, the this, the that, but that you actually feel as a practitioner that you can do this for real, actually see the difference, the change in the patient. You know what I'm saying? Why, in that case, knowing that you can do that, that things are curable, it seems to me that when you see a sick person, the first priority is to make them better. That's it. It's not a question of getting your $1,500 or your this or your that. And if money stands in the way, then it's no problem and you forget about it and you just do it. Does that seem radical or crazy or absurd or out of step with our society? Probably at least one of those. But it's extremely important because it gives us a tip-off in case we didn't know, maybe, as to where this society has been headed for a long time. That someone would actually not only be legally encouraged or at least permitted to withhold the solution to somebody's serious health crisis, but that they would actually in their minds imagine that they had all the excuse and the justification in the world because after all, everybody's got to make a buck. I think that's quite incredible that we've come to that point myself. Quite incredible. But there are other reasons that doctors shouldn't be rich. I have to say, what does that tell you about the practitioner if you are faced with such a person? Maybe it tells you that they can't really do what they say they can do. That's a serious one right there. Now, another reason that doctors shouldn't be rich, and basically why I'm doing this particular program, is that if money were not the issue, these doctors would educate their patients more intensively and seriously and committedly in taking care of themselves. In other words, instead of making a bit of a mystique out of how they operate and what they're doing for the patient, you see, which of course is then worth all sorts of money because the patient doesn't really understand, the doctor reveals all to the patients about taking care of themselves, not just in an offhanded way, not just with a fact sheet, not just with an occasional seminar, but as the rock bottom part of their practice, the major thing they do. And of course, if that's the major thing they do, you can see immediately that we're talking here about money comes into question now. Hey, wait a minute, you know, if you're spilling all your secrets to me, then where does money come in? Pretty soon the patient begins to get the idea that this is not really a money proposition, whether the doctor likes it or not, so the doctor doesn't do it in the first place. The doctor doesn't come down off the pedestal. Reminds me of an acupuncturist I once knew who just had to wear that white doctor's coat in his office. I mean, he just had to do it. Had to have a tray with all the needles on it. Ever seen one of these guys? And all the things were laid out with the little napkin and the thing and the sterilized thing. And, of course, they had to be sterilized and everything, but it was just an exact sort of duplicate of a doctor's office in a way. And here he was bustling around in his white coat as if to say, I'm every bit as good as a doctor, and I'll show you. But why does he have to say that? A gynecologist that I once knew down in the South Bay area, he had a real expensive practice, this guy. And I sort of got to be friends with him, and he said to me, you know, he said, in 2 weeks, I could show you just about all the procedures here that I do in examining patients in the office. I could stick a white coat on you. Patients would come in and you could examine them and you could do it. 2 weeks. And he wasn't exaggerating. But see, that's not supposed to be made public, because then how do you justify charging all that money? Well, hi, Mrs. McGillicuddy. Yes, the doctor showed me how to do this. It took me about 2 weeks to figure it out. I've got the white coat on, and now if you'll just get up in the stirrups, we'll do it, and we'll be charging you, $750 for this. And wait a minute. So, in other words, in a sense, what I'm saying is that alternative doctors should be educating their patients so that the doctors go out of business. That's the whole idea, isn't it? Instead of thinking, well, I got to make my steady $200,000 a year, they should be talking organic food, exercise, pollution, teaching their patients health. And I mean, I know doctors do this. It's all a matter of emphasis, you see. Because doctors will say, well, I already do that. Of course you do. But do you make it the main thing you do? Well, they say, no, of course not. Of course I don't do that. And another reason they don't is because they know it'll drive patients away, because patients are looking for the magic bullet. And so the patient and the doctor feed off of one another in that respect. So to my way of thinking, all practitioners of health should be doing rock-bottom things like educating their patients about health strongly as they give out pills and herbs and treatments, if not more so. Now, another thing happens if you begin to educate people about health more, and that is that the line between health and environmentalism begins to blur over, as well it should. People begin to realize, for example, the connection between food and pesticides and health and rotten meat, and how it all got abscessed and got hairballs and rat feet and so on. And they see the connection. They know they ought to be finding good, clean produce that doesn't have pesticides on it, and that all the vitamins in the world aren't going to correct eating lots of sugar or eating lousy food or not eating food, and that they're also going to eventually figure out that sugar is a cartel and a lobby and, you know, just simple stuff like that. They become educated. They'd understand what organic means. They'd support community farms, which is another whole subject that we will get into in a future show, community-supported agriculture, to ensure the availability of good produce. They'd learn what their doctors really know and what they pretend to know, because they wouldn't be hypnotized by the doc. And the docs would be more willing to admit ignorance instead of lying about how great their treatments are, or let's say exaggerating how great their treatments are. And I'm talking about alternative doctors as sure as I'm talking about orthodox doctors. And if the doctor's mystique fades a little, maybe some of the environmentalists, and I'm talking now about people in the environmental movement who still worship medical research science, will wake up and realize that they've seen through other scientific scams. They've seen through the scams of nuclear science. Oh, the waste, that's no problem. And the air pollution science, oh, the air is fine. and ocean science, oh, we don't have to worry about polluting the ocean, all those fake pronouncements. The environmentalists have seen through that before, so why can't they realize that the pharmaceutical science on which medicine is based is so full of holes and poisonous drugs, which are, of course, pollutants to the human body? You want to talk about environmental pollutants, you can't get much more polluting than substances that you ingest. And I wish that some environmental people would get hip to this. I'm sick and tired of some of these people who are out there beating the drum for a better environment while they're quite sure that medical science is pristine and good, and that you just have to go to the doctor and do the thing with the doctor. Now, part of this comes from a fundamental misunderstanding about the difference between crisis care and maintenance, and not being able to see that, yes, there are certain acute situations, emergency situations, where when health is, you know, really teetering in a very, very serious, immediate, acute way, this medical system of ours can do things that no other medical system probably has ever been able to do on balance. I'm not saying that in every acute case this is true or in every acute situation, but in many, many. However, when it comes to maintenance of health, what you do to maintain your health after the acute crisis is over, and how you enhance your health and try to improve it as just a matter of living, you know, in the future, as an ongoing thing that you do to get healthier, that's a whole different story. And there are lots of people who just don't make that distinction and don't realize that medicine is not particularly set up, orthodox medicine, to be able to do anything about health maintenance or enhancement of health. That's just not their bag. They're not built to do that. Now, one of the real reasons that I just came down this particular avenue so far in this program is to now say how important it is that this line between health and environmentalism does blur over, because we need to be able to merge these ideas in reality as activists, if you will. These issues have to come together. The environmentalists have to see what, you know, the depth of the pharmaceutical poison industry that is going on. Glory. They have to know this in their bones, the way they know that nuclear power plants are not a good idea. With the same conviction, they have to know this. We have to get off this baloney about, oh, well, the pharmaceutical industry, yes, there's some scandals now and then, and they do, you know, but on balance, it's, you know, it's an industry. No. If you've been listening to any of the earlier programs here, and you will see in the later ones, you know, this couldn't be further from the truth. So I'm now going to read a few items to you so that you can see how blurred over the line can get between health and environmentalism, as it should. And then just realize that medicine, in all of its forms, is still drawing that line pretty clearly, because it's a guarantee of money. Because, I mean, if the doctor starts talking about environmentalism, you say, well, what the hell am I doing here, doc? Why don't I just get some good water and start eating organic produce and all of those things? Well, wait a minute, I got to treat you. Okay. Some of these items were compiled by a friend of mine who's an excellent researcher on the East Coast named Michael Paul. They are summaries of articles, and I'll give you the references. New York Times, 11/19/91. Fish farmers actually dip their fish into ultrasound-stimulated containers of water containing vaccines, antibiotics, and reproductive hormones to deal with the large amount of disease occurring in their fish. The ultrasound somehow increases the amount of drugs absorbed. Believe that? They dip the fish into ultrasound-stimulated containers of water containing vaccines, antibiotics, and reproductive hormones. And who was saying that fish farming was actually, you know, so pure? All right, here's something from Environmental Action. This is a magazine. Spring 1992, and also New Scientist, 32192. This has to do with scientists and plants. Researchers at UCal Riverside have found that foreign genes implanted in crops may pass quickly into wild varieties, for example, radishes. The traits of drought, frost, and pest resistance, for example, that scientists want to confer on our food plants may well end up in the weeds, making them fierce competition for our crops. Scientists want to develop plants that are resistant to herbicide damage or that will grow in soils heavily contaminated with heavy metals. And so they're trying to look for genes that will allow the plants to do that. We're talking about food here. How will crops grown with high levels of toxins affect human health? Do you get that idea? Oh, well, we got to grow these tomatoes in arsenic and lead, so let's develop a gene so that the tomatoes thrive in the heavy metal environment. But what does that say about the people that actually eat the tomatoes and what's in the tomatoes? Oh, well, we don't care about that. Now, here's from The Ecologist, 3492. That's a magazine. An article on mad cow disease. Substantial indications that insecticides are responsible, not prions as touted by the British government. Prions are sort of floating viral particles. So here's an instance where it appears they would like to make you believe that we're talking about a germ-caused disease, but substantial evidence seems to indicate that insecticides are responsible. That's a nice cover story, huh? Oh, it's a viral disease, yes, mm-hmm, sure. Item 4492 in the New Scientist. Dutch tests of packaging used. Now, they're testing the packaging which is used to mail, through the mails, genetically altered bacteria and disease-causing organisms. These things are put in the mail, folks, in case you didn't realize it. And they're sent from lab to lab and so forth. And the Dutch estimate 15 accidental introductions, as they call it, per year. That means 15 times genetically altered bacteria and or disease-causing organisms go zip-zap out of the packaging. Mm-hmm. Now, let's take the Simone story, I like to call it. It's actually an acronym, S-M-O-N. In Japan. This is a story about an extreme nervous disorder. I wrote about it in my book, AIDS, Inc., where 700 people died over a period, I think, roughly 16 years, and 10,000, maybe more, came down with a nervous disorder. This was a severe something that happened in Japan. So the idea was, well, this is a disease. We have to find out what causes it. But some researchers and a very persistent lawyer over there began to suspect that this was not a disease at all. In fact, it was being caused by a chemical, environmentalists, by, in fact, a pharmaceutical chemical, environmentalists, manufactured by Ciba Geigy, a gigantic pharmaceutical slash chemical slash, I believe now, seed company. Drugs containing this compound, this drug called clioquinol, a parasitic drug used to fight parasites. They were marketing this compound, this drug, in 200 preparations in Japan. So the Japanese government finally, after it was pushed and pushed and pushed, opened a very wide investigation of this whole thing. A number of studies were done, and eventually a booklet was published on this, and a court case resulted, and lo and behold, Siba Geigy was found guilty. They had to remove these 200 products from the market. The year after they removed them, only 40 cases of Simone were reported. And they had to pay substantial amounts of money, or let's just say some money, I wouldn't call it substantial, to survivors, family survivors of the people who had died. You understand what I'm saying? Look at all of these items here. Environmentalism and health, you know, they get blurred over here because it is a large situation here that involves all of these elements. I just want to give you a flavor for some of these kind of stories that tend to escape public attention sometimes. Now we'll turn to the Searle Drug Company drug called Cytotec, C-Y-T-O-T-E-C. This is rather complicated, as well it should be, because we're dealing with a bunch of lies piled on top of lies. This drug, which in the generic form is called misoprostol, or something like that, misoprostol, is indicated, and now I'm reading from the actual insert, the Searle insert in the drug, is indicated for the prevention of NSAID, which is non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, including aspirin, induced gastric ulcers in patients at high risk of complications from gastric ulcer. For example, the elderly, yak, 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 and so forth. It took me a few minutes to even figure out. In other words, NSAID is an acronym for, wonderful, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, which are given to people who have inflammation, such as rheumatoid arthritis and so forth. And they have found that one of the side effects of these drugs is gastric ulcers. So what do? They invent another drug to take care of those side effects. And this drug is called Cytotec. Okay? A drug to combat a drug. Now, Cytotec, unfortunately, has side effects. Okay, you didn't think you were going to get away scot-free, did you? And we start with uterine effects. A Cytotec has been shown to produce uterine contractions that may endanger pregnancy. See contraindications and warnings. In studies in women undergoing elective termination of pregnancy during the first trimester, abortion, Cytotec caused partial or complete expulsion of the uterine contents in 11% of the subjects and increased uterine bleeding in 41%. Terrific. This sounds like just the sort of thing we want to run out and get, right? Cytotec must not be used by pregnant women. Special note for women. Cytotec may cause miscarriage. Miscarriages caused by Cytotec may be incomplete, which could lead to potentially dangerous bleeding, hospitalization, surgery, infertility, or maternal or fetal death. Misoprostol, Cytotec, has both anti-secretory, meaning inhibiting gastric acid secretion, and in animals, mucosal protective properties. Now this gets a little complicated. NSAIDs inhibits prostaglandin synthesis, and a deficiency of prostaglandins within the gastric mucosa may lead to diminishing bicarbonate and mucus secretion and may contribute to the mucosal damage caused by these agents. Misoprostol, meaning Cytotec, can increase bicarbonate and mucus production, dot, 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 dot. So that's supposedly why this drug works. Now, it's interesting here that when they say NSAIDs, these non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, they are including ibuprofen and aspirin Interesting, isn't it? Because they're admitting here in this insert that those drugs can cause gastric ulcers in some people. When's the last time that they told you that at your local pharmacy? Like, never? Oh, well. And now, here's a few adverse reactions that you can get with Cytotec other than what I've already mentioned. In subjects receiving Cytotec 400 or 800 micrograms daily in clinical trials, the most frequent gastrointestinal adverse events were diarrhea and abdominal pain. And then here's some side effects that have an incidence greater than 1% in clinical trials and may be causally related to the drug. Nausea, 3.2%, flatulence, dear, 2.9%, headache, 2.4%, vomiting, 1.3%, and constipation, 1.1%. Okay. They say, however, there were no significant differences between the incidences of these events for Cytotec and placebo. Then why do they say it may be causally related to the drug, and why do they even list it? Okay, so do you see what we're getting into here? The drug for the drug. The first drug has side effects, the second drug, and then the second drug has the other side effects. Doesn't this sound like some sort of a pollution scenario or some sort of chemical pollution on the body? Doesn't this sound like that? I hope I've been able here to convince you that there are a number of situations, and of course this is just all anecdotal, as they say, a number of situations in which environmentalism and health blur over. And so if you have a friend who's an environmentalist, why don't you turn him on to this series called Health News, in which we spell out the poisonous aspects of the pharmaceutical industry, to say the least, and we begin talking about how this is another environmental issue, and that how these areas intercross, and that how people have to get together on this and realize it's one thing, and not say the pharmaceutical industry is so different from companies like Monsanto Chemical. I mean, it's just not the same thing. Baloney. This is John Rappaport for Health News. Merrill Resler produces this series. We have a phone number, 213-243-9005, for further info, and for especially those people who want to help and join us in our activist activities. Thank you very much. See you for the next program.
Okay, and there was John Rappaport. Health News continues. And you're listening to Something's Happening on KPFK Los Angeles.